Black Lives Matter. At the Dropped Again podcast, we wholeheartedly support the Black Lives Matter movement. As individuals of color ourselves, we are allies to our Black brothers and sisters. The time for change is now.
Oh dear.
It's a straightforward catch. Catch you'll see in the playground. A 10-year-old, 11-year-old will catch that and up with their eyes shut.
There it goes. Drops it again. Can you believe that?
3, 2, 1. Let's do this. Welcome to episode 14 of Dropped Again. As always, I have with me my guy, Shahid Keshvani. Shady, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. There's been such a huge event this past weekend. Like, not very eventful for me or you. Like, I haven't been doing anything, but here we are for another episode with an interesting little story. So I'll kind of let you kick off what happened. I think we were aware of it, I guess, Friday. So why don't you set the stage for that, and we'll
discuss. So you're spot on. There's a huge event that happened on Friday. Well, we heard of it on Friday. And to set the stage, so there's an inter-squad club game going on. So at the Toronto Cricket Skating and Curling Club, they've launched an inter-squad game, inter-squad tournament. It's the first game, and I went there to watch this game. They bowled the first 19 overs of the game. It's a 20-20 game, and they step off the field, and we're like, okay, well, the time elapsed, and they couldn't get all the overs in, so let's see what's going on. I'm sitting on the patio watching this game, and all of a sudden, there's a huge circle all around the coach, and the coach is just talking. And this meeting must have gone on for 15 to 20 minutes. We're like, okay, well, there's clearly something going on. And one of the guys sneaks away out of the circle and gives my dear buddy a call and says, somebody from the Brampton League, and we play in the Toronto League, decided that it was a bright, smart idea to fly in from India and step onto a cricket field the next day without isolating or quarantining. And individuals that played in that game happened to be living with and are the siblings of another member. And so what ends up happening now is the game's called off, the club's shut down until we get COVID testing completed. So that's the story. And then today we find out that the individual has come back with a negative test. However, the person that tested positive, his name is Gurkirat Singh. I don't give a shit. You are to blame for all of this, and I'm going to call you out by name if you know this person. And I hold the team responsible as well for letting this guy play without knowing that he didn't isolate.
Yeah, man, and this whole time I thought it was the Gurkirat Singh that played for India. So, I thought, geez, man, the responsibility from that guy. So it's not that guy, that's Gurkirat Singh, man. He's played for India, and I played against him, and sort of, I the whole time I thought, dude, like, this guy's a professional, like, athlete. Like, what is going on? So it's not him. So let's try to steer away from there. But buddy who came from India, Gurkirat Singh, you probably wish you were playing for India like the rest of them. Just dumb, man. Like, man, I've had to spend my Saturday and Sunday totally, like, with the anxiety of possibly, you know, having been around somebody who's positive, man. Like, fucking, I've been here sitting here with my feet up. I thought I'd be playing cricket. I was supposed to debut in an A team. I haven't played in the Toronto Cricket A team in like 5 years. I was all amped up, and man, like, so we self isolated. You and I did the right thing, and here we are, man.
So, well, I think the biggest thing is, first of all, you have to self isolate when you come back into the country. It's a government mandate rule. So the fact that you didn't do that, you're an asshole. Straight up. And again, I'm not holding things back because this has been frustrating me for 2 days, and I'm going to let it all out on this podcast today. So first of all, you should really take a look in the mirror and saying what are your priorities are obviously mixed up, because you're saying, well, screw everybody else. I don't care if you get sick. I need to play cricket. So number one. Number two, I know for you, you've got nieces and nephews. I've got nieces and nephews. My wife was at her family's with her grandma, who's 90. So you're not just saying, you're not just putting individuals at risk that are around you, even if you're living alone, but you're putting everybody else, and that circle just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And now, yes, the our link to this came back negative, but at the end of the day, the panic and the hysteria that it caused over the last couple of days was ridiculous. And I expect this to happen again. I guarantee you in the coming weeks, it will happen again.
That's the thing. So like, if anything, we're basically like preparing you or everyone for what's coming. Like you could be at work, dude, you could be having the nicest night doing whatever. You could get that call where it's like, it's contact tracing is what it is, right? Contact tracing, which is like, you could get that call and be like, hey, you know, you were exposed to this person. And you have two options, either go and get tested or you have 2 weeks in the penalty box, basically. Like, that's what I call it, the penalty box. So, you know, nobody wants that. Like, we've all done it, but that's kind of how things are going to go for a while now, right? Like, some people are going to be exposed to it and it's just how it is. You got to isolate and you got to, and do us a favor, like do yourselves a favor, like pay attention to who you're around all the time here, right? Pay attention to who you've come across and that, because you don't want to be the, like, you don't want to be the reason why somebody's grandparent is sick and potentially, like, we know the end game here. Now, that's not to say, like, I mean, this whole asymptomatic thing with COVID, like 80% of the people are asymptomatic, so they have no idea they have it or not. So please don't go on symptoms. You got to go and get tested, right? For me, I've been at home. Like, dude, you put me at home for 2 days, I'm upset. I'm depressed. I'm here. Like, I need to be out. Like, I thought things were happening. I worked my fucking tail off all week to be able to have a little bit of fun, golf, cricket, which I was excited about. And this, and like, summer's almost done. So this kind of stuff, man, like, we got to be more responsible as humans. This one guy, like, I wish we, like, what, you don't even ever get to see this guy, man. Like, what am I going to do? Bowl off spinners, bouncer at him?
So I'm mad at him. I'm incredibly mad. And I think you can tell from my tone on the, here right now, how upset I am, but I'm also very disappointed and angry at his teammates, because the captain or that team manager or whoever runs that team made the call that this guy just landed. And you know what? We're going to ignore everything and say, yeah, you know what? Come play. Come play. And that's also ridiculous to me. So, I, you know, it's, and like I said, it just takes one. It takes one. And the backlash of all this, like you mentioned, is potentially somebody around him getting sick, whether they're asymptomatic or not. Right? You broke the rules. Now you're going to face the consequences. And the other thing is, you get somebody else sick, they get somebody else sick, and then it traces to their family members, their grandmother, their child, whatever it is. And then what? Like, I don't know if it'd be a stretch to say reckless endangerment of a life. You know what I mean? Like, if you're driving and you kill somebody just because you're speeding, that's jail time. This, you're neglecting your duty and potentially hurting somebody in the long run.
Yeah, they should make it a lot. They should make, like, you know how Toronto is known as the 6? Brampton should be known as the 19.
Oh my God, Brampton. The other thing I want to just throw out there, I know you like to scroll through Instagram as much as I do. Did you see these? So first of all, shout out to India and Pakistan on Independence Day over the last couple of days. Did you see these celebrations going on at Gerrard Street?
Yeah, man. Like last night, last night I saw it. I was watching the UFC and everything. So I'd had a few, whatever, and tuned in. So I even commented. Like sometimes I comment because I just have this thing that I just like to see my own comment because I think it's funny or whatever. So like, but yeah, like they were doing the one leg, you know, twisting the hands on the one leg. Like how many Pakistan cricket jerseys did you see, buddy? How many like classic, like fucking short on the sides, spiky in the front, you know, like did you see?
Oh, that classic Pakistan Day celebrations. But bringing it back to like what we're talking about, how many of those guys do you think play in the league? Right? Like, there's definitely more than a handful of those guys that play in the Brampton League, the Mississauga League, and all the leagues.
I don't know, man. If they're from Pakistan, they definitely played for the estate cricket. I played for my estate, so don't play here in the Toronto.
Oh, man. No, 100%. To that note, we obviously, the negative result came back.
Yeah.
And we got the email saying cricket is set to resume. But you know what? I made a decision last night. I emailed the coach back. I said, I'm done because I don't trust people, act selfishly, and they're putting their own needs ahead of others. And that, to me, I can't respect, and I can't get behind.
Dude, I don't know. Like, there's probably more people like you. I don't even know. Like, dude, I probably dropped now. Like, I don't even know what's happening, when the next game is, what's happening. I couldn't even believe I was playing. But my thing is now, like, guys, how many, like, during COVID, how many teams do you need to play for? So I love you guys. I love you guys, right? Cricket, you love cricket. Fucking awesome. You love cricket. But dude, it's COVID. Like, you don't have to go and play for four teams in four leagues. Like, cricket's amazing, but wait till you get to you're going to hate it if you play that much cricket. I didn't even play that much because it wasn't really my favorite sport. But like, if you're playing all this cricket, man, for all these different teams, you're exposed to so many risks. Like, dumb it down. You're affecting the other players of the other teams you play for. Like, dude, you play in this Brampton League game. Like, there's guys who are like GT20 guys playing in these kind of leagues. They're national team guys playing for these leagues. Now, we have, I know you and I are pretty similar in the way we think about it. You ever play any Scarborough League games, buddy? Me either. You ever play any other league games? We're not better than you guys. That's not what we're saying. That's just RC and I. I don't think we were spoiled probably playing at the Toronto Cricket Club. So where else are we going to go and play? But that has a lot to be said, or there's a lot to be said about that. And then the lack of like club culture and all the culture that we speak about. And in this interview coming up today with Nitz, you're going to hear about sporting culture, right? You're going to really hear about his take on sporting culture and how he experienced sporting culture and how important a team and teammates and individuals in that team are. We don't have that culture here. We have a very, like, I'm sorry to say, but this is a very tape ball cricket culture that we have here, right? I'm sorry to say that, but, you know, hopefully things are changing. You know, I spoke to Zubin the other day, and we spoke just a lot about infrastructure within the league setup, like all that we've been basically talking about on this podcast, man. Every week, it seems that something just ties into why we're so behind, and it's just little unprofessional things like this, man.
Well, just speaking of professionalism, right, it could have been so easy to just say, hey, this happened. Let's cancel this weekend altogether until we figure out what's going on. But the league chose not to do that. It was up to the individual teams whether they wanted to play or not. Oh, yeah, why? Because they signed a waiver. Cool. Whatever happens, they're at fault. There's no risk to the league and the money that they're making off this. We still haven't gotten how much money that they're making off this. And the second thing is you're right. The structure and the professionalism is simply not there. When you think across the league, in Toronto specifically, and I'm sure this is the case all across Canada, how many clubs can you truly say have a culture? And that's something Nitish talks about thoroughly throughout this interview, is the culture. It's not about the individuals, because the individuals come and go. It's about the culture of the club or the team itself. And I wouldn't say maybe Masters, maybe the Toronto Cricket Club, maybe. Not as much, but there isn't anybody, right?
Yeah.
I can't say that there is one.
For us, you know, I'd say Ramblers and OCA, you have to have your own ground, first of all. You have to have your own ground, your own club. You have a sense of that. Like OCA, they're pretty tight-knit. I know that. Rambler guys pretty tight-knit. But, you know, the cricket club has, like, the Toronto Cricket Club is not a cricket club. It's a club that has to have cricket. And I say that, like, some of them probably want to have cricket. Like, I'm not speaking for people here, but it has to have cricket. So that's why there's cricket there, right? It doesn't have a choice. It would be tennis courts. It would be another clubhouse. It would be, you know, see you guys later. And I just got back to the club and, you know, I dealt with this, you know, as a coach, and I was a pro there. I was a player there too. Dealt with this my whole life. But when I was there, the cricket section wasn't thriving with so many members, right? It was very sort of bleak, very, very, very slow, very quiet and calm. Now there's a lot of members. There's a lot of young players. There's a lot of players. They bring their families. They bring everybody because it's a cool vibe on the, you know, the patio and the whole setup there, and you're great.
Absolutely. I agree with you, man. And I think as a club, we've done a better job specifically over the last couple of years, getting involved. I think we've got a lot more full members now, which is very necessary and very important. And that's going to improving the image. This Interclub Championship, which is taking place, I think is a critical part to that, because you're getting involved with the associate cricketers who are doing other activities. They're involved in squash and tennis and all that good stuff. So I think it's really helping to bring things together. And I think hopefully we'll see that continue over the next couple of years and see that change being translated. I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. We're talking to... I mean, this kid is the GOAT for me in terms of cricket in Canada, man. Like, and I've seen this kid grow up from, I mentioned it earlier, right? He was the first person I seen play cricket in Canada at 8 years old. He's a dear friend of ours, both of ours, right? And somebody that I really respect and goes about cricket the right way. We have Nitish Kumar on the episode today. We took a little bit of a different route because we're talking about his journey, not from when he was little, but his journey through the ranks in England.
Yeah, I thought that was a good way to go about it. I mean, you know, I would be surprised if everybody didn't know his story as a junior. Like, it's been talked about on the episodes, right? Just coming up through TCA and all that stuff. But, you know, he spent a lot of his cricket, you know, days and his best times away from Canada playing in England. And he obviously highlights that on a level that I think... If you talk about professionalism and you know, best grounds and best facilities and best of the best of the best, you know, he managed and was lucky to go through that route and also bring a little bit of that back. And, you know, we don't talk about it all in the interview, but man, when he was made captain of the Canada team and the success they had, like he fell short, I know, in a few tournaments, but like, it was his time as a captain. Like, you wanted to grow with him. I thought he should have continued on as the captain. I know how much nonsense and nakre that he dealt with the president, the ex-president, I'm going to say it right off the bat, and he didn't want anything to do with it. Then there was how many different captain changes, you know, they brought a guy just for one tour to captain. You know what, man, like if that core would have stayed together, I think under his leadership, he would have established a culture that was very similar to what he learned and gained in England, but also what he learned and gained through being a Canadian cricketer, because he grew up and played and watched with and played through the ranks. So he would have been able to formulate a plan over time and get guys to buy into it, which I think was well in the works. And unfortunately, just like every other Canada team and era, there's these kinds of politics and just absolute nonsense that goes on. And he wanted nothing to do with it. And they actually I think they just took it away from him anyways and went another route.
Yeah, and this is part one, right? So we're going to get into the Canada stuff. So look out for that next week on the interview with Nitish Kumar. Without further ado, let's kick it off to Nitish. This interview is brought to you by Yashi Sports. And now we welcome on a very special guest. I mentioned in the very first episode of this podcast that I walked into my first ever practice in Canada, and he's the kid that I saw. I saw him at the age of 8, but ever before then, everyone knew this guy was going to be special. He's gone on to become the face of Canadian cricket, and he's only 25. We're expecting bigger things, but we welcome to Dropped Again, Nitish Ronick Kumar. Nits, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, lads. I've been waiting. You know, it's been I've been waiting since the first episode to get on here. But yeah, thanks for having me. Hopefully you have some fun.
You're a pretty popular guy. It was tough to get you, man.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what's happening. Too many people want me.
Nits is just upset that we didn't get him on first, so...
I know. That thought I would be the first one there. It's okay. But it's all good. It's all good. Happy to be here, Hots.
Thanks for being here. I just said your full name there. Can we start by talking about your middle name for a second? Ronick?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
So from my understanding or my knowledge, my dad used to like hockey player, Jeremy Ronick, who used to play for the Flyers. And he just thought, oh, that'd be a nice middle name. And he just stuck it in there. It's a nice little name. I actually quite like it, but the way it came about, it's pretty bizarre, but I think that's all right.
Jeremy Ronick, not a bad guy to have a middle name, man. He was, you obviously probably know about him, but for those who don't, really fierce competitor. He has a lot of scars all over himself, all over his face, shows his sort of battle wounds. So a little bit of irony with that, and I think we might get to that a little bit later on. Yeah. But today, we wanted to get you on, obviously, and I think everybody's probably, again, like we spoke about, expecting the, you know, the standard, you know, where'd you start and all that stuff. So I think we're going to do a little something different. Everybody knows your journey, you know, first player, youngest player to play in the World Cup and all that. For me, kind of right off the bat, I'm more interested in the climb, the experience of being away from Canada playing cricket. So talk to us about sort of, you know, when you left Canada, why you left Canada, how long you were away, what were you doing, and where were you?
So it actually all happened pretty quickly. I think we were at the 2011 World Cup, and Dave was there, and then Zub was there. And at that time, there was rumors that they were going to go into a 10-team World Cup. So, like, you're going into a 10-team World Cup, that's pretty – you're pretty cooked as an associate nation. Like, you're not going to make it. It's pretty tough. So we started having chats there. I think Zub was the one that spearheaded a little bit, just talking. I think it might have been David Hussey, because David Hussey at the time was playing for – Australia, but he was also playing for Notts, which was, there was a few coaches at Notts that coached at Repton where I ended up going. I still to this day don't know how it all happened, but I think the conversation stuff, like, we started really looking hard into it. That was like March or just before that, 2011. Then 2011 August, I was at Repton. Just thought it was a better situation for me, like, sort of get my studies. Like, you're not compromising either your studies or your cricket, and from my experiences, it was like an awesome move. So we headed out to Repton. I did 2 years at Repton, and then I did 3 years at Loughborough. And it was probably one of the most funnest years that I've had playing cricket and being at school and stuff like that.
Well, it's good that you went to Repton and learned how to say most funnest. So that's great.
Most funnest. Yeah.
And obviously Repton was a at school, is that right? That specialized in cricket?
Yeah, so it specialized in, like, sort of a lot of sports. It was a bit different from high school in Scarborough to wearing a suit and tie every day, mate. You gotta wear it, and I learned how to tie a tie and stuff like that. But, like, it was so they had, like, these sports days, which is Tuesdays and Thursdays, so you're allowed to train and play sports. But the ruling there was you have to play two sports. So you have to play a winter sport, and then you have to play a summer sport unless you're already playing at a representative level. So I was already playing for Canada at the time, so I got very lucky where I just played cricket all year round. A lot of the other lads would have to, like, sort of play football in the winter and then play cricket in the summer or whatever. So, but it was a lot of it revolved around physical activity and sport. So it was a good fit. And they made sure you did well in, like, your studies academically and stuff like that. And you had to plan out, like, what your future was, and they helped to the best of their ability to get you there. But it was awesome.
Sorry, RC, man. I know you're keen, buddy. I see you on the screen.
I'm ready to jump out of this here.
But real quickly, just a quick question. Was it an all-boys school, or was it co-ed?
Oh, no, it was co-ed. Come on. It was, but, like, you had like your boys' boarding houses and then your girls' ones, and it was co-ed, but it was, you know how it goes down in boarding schools. It was a good time though.
I'll bet. RC, off to you.
What I want to know is, obviously, getting there, cricket's the focus for you, but tell us about some of the people that have gone through the ranks of Repton, because I know it's a very prestigious school down there. Tell us a little bit about some of the people that have gone through there and what that feeling was for you to walk into Repton for the first time, going from Woburn
yeah,
to Repton.
So Repton, like, a lot of representative players and stuff from Repton, like, a lot of them have been field hockey players. And, like, I couldn't tell you names, but, like, you had a lot of people that represented England at the Olympics and stuff that have gone through Repton and England age groups. We have a guy that plays in the EPL, Watford. He plays for Watford, Will Hughes. He was in our boarding house the year before I came, he left. And there was, like, X amount of cricketers. Like, there's, like, a board in the pavilion. The pavilion's, like, 400 years old, and it tells you, like, all the first-class ODI international cricketers. And I forget the guy's name. There was one guy that, like, he's quite well known, and he was sort of a boarder at Repton. But there's, like, loads of, I wouldn't say there's loads of international cricketers, but there's a lot of county cricketers that came from Repton. I just think, like, the way it is there, a lot of guys that are playing international cricket have probably not gone through sort of school. Like, they're probably already in a setup, like a county setup and stuff like that. But there's loads, and I think hockey was, we were probably best at sort of field hockey, and cricket was obviously there, but cricket, you have a wide range of guys that are, like, really good, and guys that are just, because that's how school is, right? Like, not everyone's there for sports. Some guys get academic scholarships and stuff like that, but they're good enough to play. But there was loads of big time names.
I'm sure most of the Indian kids there weren't there for sports.
There was two of them.
More for the study.
There was three of them, I think. Me, my buddy in my boarding house, and like a girl in a different house. That's it.
So what was that? What was that like? I mean, you know, I talked about on a previous episode, like when you're wearing a suit and tie to school and everybody's wearing the same uniform. I don't know. I had that, and like it kind of made me feel like I belonged a little bit more. Like if you were wearing your like Woburn jeans, like it would have been in chaos, man. So they would
my Woburn jeans
another way, but yeah. So how was that?
I got along there pretty easy, to be honest. Like I'm not gonna pump my tires, but I already played a World Cup and stuff like that. So like, cricket's quite big there. So like you fit in with cricket. It's not like here. Like if you go to a boarding school here and you say, "Oh, I play cricket," they'll be like, "Okay, not like that." So like cricket's pretty. It's pretty well known. And there was another funny thing there. Like they'd be like, "You're not brown. You're Canadian." Because like I have an accent. I'm like, "No, my skin color is brown still. Like I'm Canadian because I'm born in Canada." Like so they're like that was like sort of the mindset. So I got away with it more than I would say like a guy that was born in the UK. But like I don't know, at that time, like at the age we're there, like what is it, 16 to 18, like that sort of stuff didn't really matter. Like if you like got along with your buddies, like you lived with them, right, boarding house and stuff like that, then it didn't really matter. But like cricket's quite a big thing there, so like for you to be playing cricket, I was already played the World Cup, I fit in pretty easy, because that's like almost playing like hockey here or something. Like if you played hockey, it didn't matter, right? You just get in, and obviously there's whatever there is, but no, I found it pretty easy to get in.
I'm just thinking in my head, like going through the list, like, okay, so a guy plays World Cup, one of the few like colored guys in the school. It's a co-ed school. Probably had a great time, Nitz.
Yeah, no, the first month I got there, I didn't say a word, because I was just like, yeah. I was like, pretty nervous. And then there was, I got to keep some things under wraps. So like boarding schools they have their own sort of ways of getting comfortable. Like you're in an all boys boarding house. There's a few rugby guys in there. There's a few guys that just do maths questions, and like you're all trying to fit in, and it's like it's just like a comedy show. Like one guy's trying to like make me talk, and like the best way that he finds out is like, "All right, yo, Nitz has gone to shower. I'm gonna go make him uncomfortable. Let him get out today. Like he's been 1 month. I haven't heard from him. I'm gonna just get in there, make him so uncomfortable that he's gonna have to talk to us." And then after 1 month, this one dude, it all just fell into place.
That's all it took to get you out of your shell, because before you went, you were very shy, you were very almost like introverted, but obviously not now. And I think that experience of going out, so for a lot of the younger guys listening, like, and RC and I both did it as well, going away to play cricket, right? Like it brings the man or even woman out of you. Yeah. Some of the girls from OCA have gone and played cricket abroad. I hope I'm right, but I'm sure they have. And that it's just a great experience to do something different. And it kind of speeds the adulthood side up a little bit.
And I think what was tough was like cricket is a summer. Like that's when you actually start doing your team stuff. Like you don't actually start like cricket as a team until like maybe December, November. So like I'm there in August. Like once you're in a team, like it's very easy to get along with everyone. Then they have friends. But like the first couple months where you're just like you're on your own, you're just going to class. Like class is a pretty hard place to sort of expand like your friendships and stuff. But it was pretty easy because once you start living with someone 7 days, like living with 50 dudes like 7 days a week, and everyone's on campus, it's pretty easy to just.
And are you on the wall? You know, you talked about the wall with all those names. Like, did you do anything special there where you're on the wall?
Yeah, so I was, I'm pretty just, like, Luffy dude. Like, I don't pay attention to the details. But, like, I think my last year, like, I made 300s, but I almost broke the record of private school runs in a year. But, like, I think I was behind by 100 or 150 runs or something like that. I think it was, like, almost 1,000. And that year, we had a record. We still have that record at Repton where we only lost one game. So we played 16, won 15, lost one.
So what you're saying is you dominated the UK private school sector and earned yourself a scholarship?
Yes. Yeah, so I was also on scholarship at Repton. I don't know how I got that. Zoo probably did something. They got me a scholarship. Like, I don't know how much it was. But then you got to Loughborough, and Loughborough is – like, you don't go in with a scholarship. Like, you have to get in on your academic admissions, and then – you apply. So their scholarship works on your like if I've represented county 50 games, and I'll probably get a top, or international, I'll probably get a top scholarship. If I'm like a junior guy, I'll get like, and scholarships in the UK are not like full ride. It's like I got like $5,000 or $3,000, which helped a little bit with you're living there and stuff like that. But like you're still on scholarship, so it's pretty. You get nice little perks there if you're on the top team with scholarship. Like you get your gym hours and stuff where no one else is allowed to go in and stuff like that. So it's pretty good gig. So
you got into Loughborough, and Loughborough is that's an A. It's an MCCU, which means you play first class games against the counties in the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
but it's also where the English Academy is held. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the women's live there. I think they live just off campus. And then you have like not even just cricket, like you have sport, UK, like Olympic, like all the Olympic athletes are there. The sport UK, you got rugby UK or UK. And then you have the only thing that's probably not there is like the Football Association, because they're not, their sort of mandate is not tied to like guys coming through schools. Like you're already like 10 and you're in an academy, but like everyone's there. Like you would be playing there. You see Jimmy Anderson have to do a fitness test or something where the boys are there. Like you'll just like, that's where everything happens in central UK. And like, it's like an amazing setup. It's just like some of the best facilities that you'll see in the world.
You're going from Repton, obviously a prestigious school. Now you're going to a prestigious university. Tell us a little bit about, A, were you already a part of the first 11? Kind of like, what was your setup like? And also, who were some of these other guys that you were playing with? I mean, you had already played international cricket, so I don't think you would have to do much of, hey, I belong.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about that experience first walking into Loughborough.
So the way it works there, you actually have to get in on your academic admissions. It doesn't matter. Like, I could have been Virat Kohli. It didn't matter unless my...
So you're saying you're smart. Okay, we get it.
No. So you have to get in, and then you actually have to trial, regardless who you are. Like, everyone trials. Yeah, Loughborough, you had the MCCU, which is top. Then you had the first 11, second 11, third 11, fourth 11. The more you go down, the more beer league it is, basically. So if you're, once you end up in the fourth, they're just worried about when is the end of the game, so we could just get the beers in. But you trial. So you go through, like, three trials. You have, like, one, and then you have, like, the last. Like, if you're good enough, they just skip you to the last trial. And then you get put into a squad where you're put. My first year was a pretty big squad in comparison to like a lot of the years. I think it was like 20 something people. And that's your winter training squad. And then you have like that setup there is like unreal, because you have guys that have either been released from their counties or something, and they're trying to get their degree, but they're also trying to get like a contract by the end of like. So there's no like. There's no like fucking like messing around there. Like guys are like trying to get contracts and stuff like that. So then you're at a training squad, which by February gets cut into 15, and that'll be your squad for the summer, which is an amazing, like the amount of cricket you play is unreal. That's sort of the gist of it. And like some of the guys, like we have a guy that's in the England squad now who came a year after me, James Bracey. And he's like, he's been in and around the squad. He's been playing. We had Billings that left a few years before that he graduated through that. And like, I think there's like Monty might have been there or something. I don't think he graduated though, but
there's no way Monty graduated.
I think he could go play now if he wanted, if he just applied. But there's like loads of guys. We had like county guys. Now we had Hassan Azad, who had an amazing season last year, and he was in and around like getting picked. I remember a guy got picked from hitting Maxwell on the helmet. He got a contract from one of the counties because he hit Maxwell on the helmet twice in the head, like bowling mid-80s. Like that's how like you impress. Like everyone's like looking out because apparently there's 25% of county cricketers have been through one of the MCCU universities. Something like that. I think there's a stat, 25%. And apparently, like...
And there's only, like, five or six, right? What is it, four or six MCC?
Six. But I think they stopped... I want to say they stopped it now. Like, I think they stopped the funding or
really?
Something. So there's six of them. There's Leeds, Cardiff, Loughborough, Oxford, Cambridge, and Durham. You go there, but...
The highlight of MCCU, like, university cricket... When the first class season starts, like you guys get to play against county teams.
So we play three first class. So two of them are counted as first class games. Like they're actually in their stats as first class games. And then you play another one, which is like another 3-day game against counties. And a lot of counties use it for like their warm up. So you get like the full teams and stuff playing. But like it's tough too, because like you're playing against county teams in April or March. Like the wickets are spicy, and that's like a big thing, because like you do well there, like there's always guys looking, like they're looking for players, like young guys and stuff like that, and loads of dudes have got contracts from doing well in a couple of games. And like, that's like all the, like, you gotta understand, like, there's a lot of like that professionalism stuff, but it's still uni. So like around the cricket, there's a lot of little other stuff, fun and stuff that's going on too.
So let's talk about that for a second, because we talk about contracts, and obviously, unfortunately enough, you weren't able to get a contract with the county. And just speak to that, because obviously your performances stood out, right? You scored runs. I think you had 100 in one of the MCCU games as well. So talk to us about. Okay, well, there you go. Sorry. He came in saying he was humble, and then he's correcting us on the stats. That's fine.
Nitz is very humble, like, to a fault. Like, the man has scored county hundreds against Kent and whatever, and that's kind of almost to a fault for Nitz. But yeah, like, talk about, you know, obviously those experiences, man, like, you did so well, but you would have been a shoo-in to get into a county circuit as a young guy. Why couldn't you play county cricket?
So it was less to do with cricket, it's more to do with like the visa issues there. So it's not, I don't know how the visa works in Canada, but like once you're on a student visa, like your days don't count towards you living in the country. And the whole time I was in the UK, like what, 6 years, I was on a student visa. So apparently at that time, this was before the 2015 World Cup where they fast-tracked Jofra Archer, they changed it to 3 years. When I was there, it was a seven. So then after you finish uni, because you can only have one visa, then you have to get a work visa. And you had to live there for 7 years to qualify, and then you could play. Like, and apparently there's something like you couldn't play at, like, they couldn't sign you as an overseas if you were an associate cricketer. Like, you couldn't be on an overseas pro. And there was like another guy too that played for Hong Kong, Anshuman Rath. Like, he had the same problem. He was linked with Middlesex, and he had the same issue. He was there for school for X amount of time, and they couldn't sign him. Like, he didn't. He played a lot of second team games and stuff like that, and then just ended up moving on because it was more to do with like the whole, like the government and like their immigration sort of issues more than like the cricket. So it was a shame. Like, it was like the setup in the UK is probably the best time I had, like with cricket and stuff like that.
That's the home of cricket, right? And I think that just speaks to where we struggle against some of the nations as well. When you look at the likes of Ireland, Scotland, those guys can get into the counties because of the UK connection, right? And they're a part of the UK. But you also, you know, when you're at Loughborough, you also had a chance to play at Lords.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, I think I could be pretty honest now since I this is a pretty good story. Actually, I'll be pretty open on this one. So we get to London. So you qualify for the MCC, the finals, and the finals, it's a 2-day comp, but the finals are 1 day. They only give you 1 day at Lords. But what they do is they give you a hotel the night before and they give you a hotel the night after. So you could go out. They have all this rest in the long room and stuff like that. So we get to the hotel the day before, and then I get a few messages. Like, all my boarding school friends are working in London. So they're like, "Oh, you're in London. I haven't seen you in a while. You want to come out for dinner?" So I'm in London. I have a hotel. Yeah, I'll just go out for dinner and then come back. Let's get to dinner with a few of the friends. They have a few beers, so I'm like, rude not to like indulge, like, you're out in London and stuff like that. Yeah, I got final tomorrow, I'll get up, it's okay, it's walking distance. So this is like 8 o'clock, couple beers, and then I get another call from another buddy, because everyone in London, like, you could just get, like, the underground's so good that you just get on an RLC there. So now it's like 12 and I'm still saying it's rude not to have another one. So now I'm like 7 in, like, I'm like, oh geez, I gotta play at Lords tomorrow. This could be a shocker. Imagine getting a first ball at Lords. Like, you get to play once and you just, and I don't know, like, I ended up getting home at 4 in the morning, something like that. And I'm like, oh geez, I gotta play at Lords. And I'm stressed about playing at Lords, but I'm also stressed that, oh, I have to get up extra early because I gotta figure out how to do this tie. Because you have to get into Lords, to get into the pavilion, you have to wear a full suit. So it's like 4 or 5 and I'm gone to sleep. I wake up at 7. I'm at breakfast by myself, just disappointed, like, just let that get the best of me last night. I walk to the ground on my own, you know, just thinking about, Nitz, if you don't at least, like, get off the mark here and, like, hit one ball in the middle, you just. So I'm, like, struggling, though. Like, I get to Lords, I take a shower, and I sit down in the change room, and I'm still. It's still on me. So I go back in the shower. Number two, the guy's like, what's this guy doing? So I have 2 showers before I've even warmed up. And I'm sitting there. So then I go warm up. And my buddy's like, Nitz, you had a good night last night? I'm like, no, man. I went to bed at like 9:30 and I woke up. And He's like, dude, I've never seen you kick. Like, so we play footy for warm up. I've never seen you connect the ball like that when you're sober in your life. So you must be goose. So I'm like, that's nice logic, but nah, I was at sleep. So I was feeling so, I had to shower again. So I showered, I think, four times before we went out, and thank God we fielded first. So we ended up fielding first. And then, so by the time I batted, I think I had five showers. I had about five coffees. I'm like, I make sure I score rather than, like, that day we lost, but I ended up making, I think, 80 odd and stuff. It was unbelievable. Like, the whole vibe of Lourdes, it's like a different environment. And then, like, we lost, but then right when you lose, you have the doorman. He just rolls in. Beers, Peronis, and stuff like that. He's like, lads, enjoy yourself. You got to put the suit back on. You go down to the long room. They have, like, finger foods, wines, beers, and stuff like that. And then you head out into London for the evening. You get in the hotel, and you go home. It's like the whole event is just, like, but I just, like, it's, like, yeah. This thought process of rude not to have one just because someone else is having it. I was like, this is nits. You're gone crazy here. But, like, it was good fun. So I missed it the year before because I went to CPL. And then the year after, like, we played it. It's good fun. You got the guys properly get up for the game regardless of what's happening because you're playing at Lourdes. It's so prestigious there. They didn't even let us warm up on the pitch. You have to go warm up on the nursery ground that's like under the media center. But that place is they didn't even let like parents in, like unless you're wearing like a long dress or like RC, like I know you have like all that style, but this no show sock, they'll be like, sorry pal, you can stay out there unless you're like proper. But that's like an amazing place. That nothing like it.
First of all, great story, because I think knowing you, we know that it's a bit tough for you to get you out. You do tend to have a little bit of FOMO,
yeah,
and you like to stay out a little bit, so which is fine. But hey, the great Sir Garfield Sober says I play for the nights out, so they can't say anything if you score runs.
I'm pretty good, like when it comes to like Canada stuff, and like I'm pretty disciplined. But like I think it was like the whole. Oh, playing at Lourdes tomorrow, just like, oh, we're in London, like, oh my God. And just like, I was like, by the time I got there, I was like, holy.
The funny thing is probably wouldn't have been able to sleep anyways, knowing that you'd play at Lourdes tomorrow. So it probably worked out for the best. What was it like batting there though? I mean, everybody's heard of the slope. Majority of the people listening to this podcast have not played at Lourdes. Talk to us a little bit about batting on that slope and what that felt like for you.
So batting, I didn't feel it too much. When I was in slips, like down the slope, and you had one of the boys bowling, you could like tell it's like actually going down the slope, like but when you're batting, I guess like the first few balls you're like a couple of inches off just because like the way you think the ball is going to come, but then you get pretty used to it. It's like anything, like a turning wicket, you get used to how much it turns, like you just get, it's pretty. But in slips, when I was in slips, like I really felt like it was like the guy was going to a lefty. So when we usually see it back in the day, Glenn McGrath's born from that end, it's going down the slope, like you could tell like it's probably going down the slope. But it's like big, like you could tell there's a slope there, but I think at the end of it it's pretty like nullified. But
yeah,
I think as a bowler you could properly use it if you're like smart, like a bowler I think you get more out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen some of the best bowlers in the world to take
tons. I got stumped that game, but the slope was in my favor. I still missed it, so it's supposed to be going to the middle of my bat. So imagine how much I missed that by.
You're seeing three balls at that point. It's fine.
Yeah. Cobby used to say, if you're seeing three of them, just hit the middle one, son.
So that's actually a great point, because that's exactly where I wanted to go, was your coach at Loughborough. Oh, can you tell us a little bit about him? Because we've heard that he's a character just from knowing you, but tell us a little bit about your coach at Loughborough.
Yeah, he was like one of the best like vocal guys. Like you would be up for anything. Like, I remember like we had like this session. It was like on a Wednesday, and Wednesday is like a sport night. And we call it like planting seeds. You're 18 guys. There's one guy in that group that's going to feel like going out on any given night. Any given night, he's going to ask the boys, because you literally train together every day, see these guys every day. So yeah, a couple guys that go at 10 a.m. Lads, few things happening tonight, you know, it's a sports night. Anyone keen to have a dabble out at the Union, you know? And then you get no response because no one wants to touch that one. And we call it planting the seed. You got to plant it early enough so it germinates. This is like the whole thing. You got to let it germinate. You got to let it sit in people's head. And now they're thinking the whole day. They're at training. They're like, oh, some of these people are going to be out. And guys are going crazy. So no one's going out today. Apparently, I think there was like exam period or something. So we've done like an amazing session. Like, you know, when you do a team, like you guys know, when we do a team fielding session and everyone's up for it, you know how amped you get and stuff like that. Like, you just like diving indoors and we're doing all that stuff. And we finished it and Kobe brings us in. He's like, lads, come in. And like, we're goosed here. We're like proper like sweating. And Michael Burgess is one of my great friends. He plays for Warwickshire. He's a captain. And he's also amazing, amazing character. He goes, Burgie, what do you think about the session today? Like, you guys think you deserve, like you guys, Burgie goes, we fucking gave it our all today. Like, that was, like, unbelievable. Kobe goes, yeah, I agree. So at this time, there's about two guys that said they want to go out. Kobe takes his wallet out. He gives Burgie a 40, first round on me. The whole squad went out that night till 5 in the morning. Everyone went out. That 40 didn't even pay for anything. It paid for like 5 drinks, but like he was like unbelievable. Like he, like the way he talks, and like I remember him crying one day, like crying. A guy, so he apparently in his life he's never made 100. He's averaged 35 in county cricket, but his high score is at 99. And we had a good friend of mine, Hassan. He's playing against Knott's in one of the county games. Just put an absolute shift in, like 240 balls, 99, and he gets out on 99. And like the boys are quiet, and I'm like, I'm not like. And like Kobe's like tearing because he cared that much. He's like, dude, like he's like, yo, like Kobe's like, so he had two sides of me. He had like a really fun side and he had like a really caring, like he wanted to make sure everything is good and stuff like that. There are so many stories. We had a story where like we're at the Red Bull T20 and the boys are pretty hungover. Like we played well, we're pretty hungover from the night before and there's beers there and he just comes storming in. And he's like angry and we're confused and we're drinking really slow because we can't, like it's just too much. And he goes, lads, either we're drinking or we're not drinking. Make a decision. And everyone starts down their drinks. Yeah, Cubby, we're drinking. So he had amazing sides. I wouldn't say the most hands-on coach, like, but he made sure like you were comfortable and he knew how to talk to every player. Like he would get the best out of me. And like getting the best out of me is probably different from getting the best out of you boys. Like everyone has a different way and he was very good with his words. And we had like a great time, like 3 years. And there was like so many stories. Like it's some of them, like I feel bad saying, cause like it's just like, it's too much going on. Like we had like one time where he's put at the end of the season, he's put 400 pounds behind the bar, like just like drinks a team. And he brings the guys into a team huddle at the pub and he goes, you fucking guys just drink too much. You got to stop. And like, he knew like we were going out before games and stuff like that. He's like, boys, I know you're winning, but I like, just got to put a lid on it sometimes. And it's just awesome. But like, I feel like that he knew that guys were accountable. Like guys were there to get contracts. So like, as much you're still at uni, you're gonna do like the stupid stuff you do at uni, go on a night out, but I don't think you'll ever get anyone compromising their opportunity to get a contract just for a few drinks. But like that was a fun thing because guys usually have to go hard, but then you'll never see anyone miss a training session and stuff like that. So it was a good little balance there, but it was good fun.
I mean, that's the kind of coaches you want, right? The that see people as individuals that make up a yeah. team, and you're seeing each person, what makes them tick, what doesn't make them tick, and then finding a way to bring everybody together.
Yeah, I agree. Like very easy to talk to as well.
You had some other characters there as well. You had a guy that played at Loughborough, a left-hander from Kenya. He was a unique case. Tell us about that.
Oh, he was an amazing guy. Like we used to call him the crispy man, Krispy Kreme. And we used to make so much fun of him. Like he used to just take it on the chin like a champ. And like, one day he walks in, like, he's probably going to, if he watches it, he's going to message me. Like, this is too funny. He walks in with this green helmet, but I've never seen this style helmet before. And he's just, like, amazing dude. And he walks in, and Bird, like, one of the boys goes, Jesus Christ, what is that on your head? And he goes, I have a cunning plan. So they used to call me Maurice, like, Maurice Madagascar, and who was the King Julian? Because he, like, Kenny, right? King Julian and Maurice. So he's like, I have a cunning plan. I'm like, I heard that and I got into that. I want to hear what this plan is. He's like, they're going to look at me. They're going to think I'm shit from the way I look. They're going to bullshit and I must hammer them around. I'm like, dude, that's a terrible plan. Like the helmet looked so bad. It was like diagonal. His thigh pad, one side was up. And I'm like, dude, you have 3 ODI 100s and you're looking like this. And he was just like, he just took it on the chin. Like he batted amazing. And like, he knew his ability like so well. Like he'd never tried to be anyone else. But he was like, awesome, like a different character. I've never met like a guy like him. His dad used to be, what's his name?
Asif Kareem.
Asif.
So and we used to call him Father, the Crispy, the, or is it Crispy? Oh, yeah.
Kareem.
No, we used to call Air Fried Crispy Kareem. We used to call his father like Papa Kareem or something like that. So, but the boys called him King Julian and me Maurice because he was like really tall and skinny and I was a little shorter. That was pretty funny. But he was, you know, he did well there. He was there for a while. I don't know what happened. I think he's back in Kenya now, but he was a good player. He didn't get – I don't think he got into Loughborough MCCU his first couple of years, and he was playing for Kenya. So, like, there was, like, a tough competition there where, like, guys were on county contracts, and they didn't get picked in the squad. They had guys that was not on contract just because he played better. So, it was like – but, yeah, King Julian, what a character. I have a cunning plan. Oh, my God. I think he says that in the movie too, right? The action movie. It's too funny.
That's amazing.
You know what's getting me the most today is like the cultural talk, right? Because like I know the UK culture. This is all culture. Like you can talk about coach and different players or whatever, but that's the culture there. And then you talk about Kenyan cricket. Kenyan cricket is very influenced by the British culture because it was British, you know,
yeah,
in the day. So that's kind of the culture that my dad played under as well. So it's very familiar and it's very similar to the culture that we have at the cricket club as well. So it's like, you know, I always thought that, and to be honest with you, that's a lot about the culture that Debo and Ash were talking about in the early 2000s there and what they had, which was a much more, I'd have to call it more professional culture, even
yeah,
so much about having fun and so much about just being real and being accepted. So
and
be a lesson to sort of the Canada cricket culture now,
yeah,
which I know you're a large part of as well, Nitz.
And yeah, and to add on to that, like the culture I love, like I'm like when I was there, it was so strong. Like we had like this culture where like I remember one of our first talks was like when you get like first years to come in and you go, dude, whatever happens, like our culture is so strong. Like we just get ways to win games. We don't lose games. Like it, and we believed in our culture so much that like little things didn't matter. Like if a guy went out, like no one went, like coaches, like those, because we believed that our culture, like the team culture was so strong that when a guy made a little joke or something, like it didn't matter. Like because they were so like cemented and like this culture, and the culture isn't formed, I don't think, in like 1 year. I think this Loughborough culture, we've been winning for what, 10 years? So like 30 years, or like leavers have been telling the first years that, dude, this is what the culture is and you got to abide by it. And I remember when I was in third year, I told first year guys, dude, I don't care like if it's 30 all out, 100 all out, as Loughborough, like when we wear these purples, our culture is so strong. We just find ways to win games. Like we're winners. Like that's our culture. And like it was cemented so strong that like little things that sometimes in team environments, like they're like, oh, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
No, it actually didn't even phase anyone because we're like, all right, we just believe that this culture is like, this is the right formula. There's nothing wrong with it. And like everyone respected what the culture was and everyone respected how every individual was. If a guy wanted to go out before a game, by all means. If a guy didn't want to go out before the game, by all means. If a guy didn't want to train the day before the game and the whole team was training, we respected that because we just believed like the culture is. It was like a different, I think the culture, that thing has been for a while because Loughborough's won a lot of stuff and I think they've cemented like the right culture there, so it's a different environment.
Yeah, and sure, what you're doing there is just like any great organization, whether it's a business, whether it's a team, anything like that, you're building the foundations of what makes you great. The individuals that make up, yeah, that might change, but as an organization your structure remains the same and your abiding principles remain the same, which, yeah, is exactly what you're saying. And those winning principles, obviously you mentioned Loughborough was successful for 10 years. You guys actually got a couple chances to represent England in the Red Bull T20, yeah, championships. Tell us a little bit about that experience for you.
Yeah, so that's so you play a T20 tournament in the UK. So you have the MCC teams and two other teams, and then the winner goes to this. So Red Bull used to sponsor this tournament where you play like the best university in South Africa. So there's 8: South Africa, Australia, India, Sri Lanka, UAE.
Don't forget,
and you actually go represent Pakistan. And like I remember first year, like the guys that were playing, there's Nagidi, Markram, like guys like that were playing. They played for Tux Uni, and you go play these tournaments, and like they're unbelievable. But I think they stopped it. I think Red Bull stopped the funding.
Yeah.
But you actually get to represent like you, like the country as like a school, and like just to add on to the cultural part, like for teams that like, there's something to look at for a university culture, why it's so strong when there's constant personnel changes, but you're able to keep the culture. Whereas like you find different teams which have the same players for 5 years don't have a culture. Yeah. And like I don't understand that, because like Loughborough, you're constantly changing personnel. So it just, like for me, it just said that once the overall culture is amazing, any personnel could come and fit into it if they're willing to. Like you don't change your culture as a team for personnel. Obviously you have to, you give them a little, you have to give a little to get a little, whatever that is. But there's something to say about that culture being so strong, and the amount of, every year there's personnel changes, but the culture is always strong. So I don't know if I'm indirectly saying it to someone, but like that's how it, like it's different. Like it's like for organizations that are allowed to keep the same teams for a long time, it's something to say like how important like team culture is, especially playing a team sport.
Yeah. And I think the to the other side of that is you have guys, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, in year one coming in that are being, I wouldn't say molded is the right word, but that are being led in the right direction by guys that are in year three. I think it's only 3 years at Loughborough for you, if I'm not mistaken.
3 years, a lot. Some people do like placement year where you're maybe you're allowed to play not the day's cricket. No, you're allowed to play the day's cricket because that's MCCU, but you're not allowed to play the Bucks cricket, yeah, which is a university stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of that a hierarchy that we're talking about is you have these guys that are saying that have bought into the culture for 3-4 years, now letting the young guys know who in a couple of years are going to be those year three, year four guys. So it's building that structure. Changing subjects for a minute here. While you were playing at Loughborough, though, you're also playing representative cricket. You're playing for Canada. You were also playing in some tournaments. You also had a chance at the CPL. Where you play for St. Lucia.
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, that was your first big tournament, I'd say. I mean, aside from playing for Canada and the World Cup.
Agreed.
This was now kind of front and center where all your games were televised. You opened the bowling in one of the first games. So tell us about kind of going into St. Lucia and now being a part of the biggest party in sport in the CPL.
Oh, I'm amazing. I think like my first year there, that the team that we had too, like the guys in the team, like Michael Hussey, like Shane Watson and stuff like that. Like you learn so much. But I remember playing. I played the first two games and didn't play again. So I had the one thing about CPL, like it's very hard to train there because the facilities are very, very used. So like, unless you're playing, it was like very hard to get a lot of training and stuff out of it, which is part of it. But I guess like cricket's not all about the training. Like your learnings could be off the field as well. So like the off the field learnings are unbelievable. But it was definitely different. Like I remember playing, and like to have a first game in Trinidad where it's packed, like it's packed all the time in Trinidad, and it was awesome. I wish like I didn't get a chance to bat though, so I just bowled two games and then was in at six. We won the first game, and then second game I ended up at like eight or something where I didn't go in. But that tournament's unbelievable. Like I know there's like IPO and stuff like that, but the amount of different from not even playing from just being the amount of different wickets and conditions you have to adapt to in one tournament. I don't think there's any other tournament like that. Like you go to Guyana and a winning score is like 120, and then you end up in St. Lucia and you have to play like three fast balls because it's a carrying wicket. Then you're in like Trinidad, it's turning. Like in one tournament, it almost felt like there's so many different tournaments when you go to a different island. It's like different vibes, and I thought it was a pretty tough tournament. Like guys that do well in the tournament actually like adapt like really well to change from Guyana then go St. Lucia. So amazing tournament, though. I had like nothing against it. I think it's an awesome tournament.
You talked a little bit about your learnings off the field. You had some experiences with some highly touted cricketers as well. Tell us about the night that you had with Brandon McCullum and Kumar Sangakkara.
Yeah, so I got to keep it pretty tame, but like,
Baz, you can keep it PG.
But Baz is like I wasn't on his team, but somehow like he like anytime like we went like he'd just be like, get stuck in with the lads. I come around the table and like I think we're sitting at the bar. Like I don't think we have a game for 5-6 days in St. Lucia. So it's me, Miller, and like a few other guys, and then Baz is there. And then the way the bar was, it's tough to like. So McCollum's like, all right, he picked up a few drinks and he's like, guys, let's go back to my suite. Obviously, big time. So he's got a suite and all that going on. And he sees Sangakkara. Apparently, he didn't catch up in a while. And then Sangakkara has a game the next day, and we go to his room. I thought Sangakkara was going to sleep, you know, game in the morning. And at 9 o'clock, this guy said he had a game yesterday, and now he's still there. But the amount, like, it was amazing. Like, they were having drinks and stuff, but like, the amount of cricket talks, like, it's just like, you learn, like, if you actually take the time to, like, interpret like what they're saying about cricket. Like their cricket's at a different level. Like they play international cricket. Like their skill set and like their tactics are like some of the tactics I wouldn't even know because like we don't even play at that level sometimes. Like they're like and like it was funny like the way it happened. And then I remember the next day like Sankar's like walks down the wicket and hits a first ball, check drive, one bounce into the side screen. I said, wow, it's easy for some, isn't it? Like that's like unbelievable. Like I think these guys like genuinely love the game. Like they're always like talking about cricket. They're trying to find ways to get better. Like even like I think McCombo might have been retired at the time, but like his knowledge and stuff, like I never played with him, but even the guys I talked to, like him, apparently like unreal, like his tactics and knowledge and stuff like that. And he had like few guys and he had different characters too. Like I had the chance to like I went out for dinner once with Michael Hussey and like if you talk to him, like I don't think there's a better guy to talk to about cricket. So you get very lucky. And then you have like other guys that are like big time cricketers, but they're a bit more laid back. They're not too much about it, you know, like they, and it's whatever works for you. So I was very lucky that our team was like good mix of different guys and it was good fun.
Yeah. I think the story that you told me, there was a guitar that came out at one point. They were just singing songs. I think they were singing Backstreet Boys or Spice Girls or something at one point. So maybe I just made that up. I just want to think about Kumar Sankara singing Backstreet's back. All right.
Just think about his cover drive. I think that's good enough. Gets the boys going. That one. That's pretty.
So Nitz, I know we're coming to the end of this and just so everybody knows, this is part one of part two. So we're going to have Nitz next week and we purposely kept Cricket Canada and the Canadian cricket side of things and your journey for cricket in Canada and what's next for you for next week's episode. But what I do want to talk about is you've played at four World Cups, one under 15, two under 19, obviously the 2011 World Cup, which we'll get to on next week's episode. Tell us a little bit about your memories of playing junior cricket and going to World Cups at such a young age and having the leadership role at the under 15 World Cup as well. So tell us a little bit about your experience there.
So firstly, I'll probably say I was pretty fortunate to play the 2010 under 19 World Cup and then the 2011 World Cup. I just think like the environment that we're in Canada, there's no way to fast track development until they basically just throw you into the deep end and then go develop. Like there's no county system. There's no like first class system. So firstly, I'd like to say I'm pretty fortunate that I played those two. And then the other ones, like I deserve to play for sure. The 2014 under 19 and the under 15. That under 15 World Cup was unbelievable. I think they stopped it. It was like a Clico sort of world championship. We were in the Caribbean, traveled through the Caribbean, like a proper World Cup. I think we played, who was playing then? Bob Rasmus was playing. Bob Rasmus made 160. They made 460 on us that day. We were as an ICC Americas team. Like, unbelievable. Unbelievable player. And then we had Craig Brathwaite, John Campbell, all these guys that were playing. Kyle Myers were playing for West Indies. I think we played against Netherlands, Hong Kong, Malaysia. Like, those. It was like, I don't know how they picked the teams in that tournament. I guess it was like whoever signed up or whoever was available and stuff like that. So that was good. 2010 was, I'm not even talking about 2011 because that was pinnacle, but 2010 was probably my fondest one. I think as the guys
that was because you were with me.
Yeah, as the guys like I got along with best, not got along with best, but just like TCA, a lot of TCA guys, a lot of. So we were out in New Zealand, which is an amazing spot. Like you're a 15-year-old kid, and I remember I think we probably played against one of the strongest teams there, no, New Zealand, and they were missing some guys.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand, they were meant to win the World Cup, right? Like, that's before they were pre-World Cup favorites. Unfortunately, they didn't go on to win it, but they were favorites.
I was pretty young there. I remember getting fined for an ice bath, $300. I didn't get paid $300. Got fined. And, like, I actually got fined for getting lost in the city for quickly getting food. I actually got lost, didn't know which way to get back, and ended up getting fined. But that was a good tournament. I think that was a little bit short, though. I didn't like the format where you only play, was it, three round robin games. I think that's a pretty crappy format, to be honest. Like,
especially the format for all under 19 World Cups, though.
I always thought like under 19, you should, if you're already spending that much money to do a World Cup, you should do it more in the like the way the 2003 was, where you get to play more games. Like, you give the guys exposure. Like, it's no point. Like, that was it. What's that thing? So you have the top eight and the bottom eight. What's the bottom eight? The bottom eight's the plate. The plate that you could play anytime. Like, we play the world qualifier where you play against PNG. Like, the plate's always going to be it's the hard reality, but most times or not, it's going to be the associate. So you rather, like, if you're trying to develop at that level, you should give like under 19 guys a chance to play more against a full nation. So I always thought like the two groups instead of the four groups where you play, maybe like just get rid of the plate and then play the round robin games and get more exposure against a full nation is probably a better development than playing three games, getting kicked out, playing a plate game against, I'm just throw a name there, Ireland, then either winning or losing that, then playing a plate game against US and then playing a plate game against PNG. Like, yeah, that doesn't do anything for anyone's development, whereas under 90 is supposed to be a development thing. So that's the one thing I thought wasn't great about those, because we had three games. Like, you didn't even get your feet wet and you're out of the tournament, basically. So that was the toughest one, though, New Zealand. Like, just the conditions were so foreign to us. And I remember we did a pre-tour in St. Kitts, so the conditions were totally opposite. Like, then you go to New Zealand and you're like, holy. But I had great fun there. I think we had a great group of guys. I think we underperformed a little bit. I would have liked to win. I think the way we started beating Zimbabwe, I thought we should have gave it a little, at least against Sri Lanka, I thought we should have done a little bit better.
Well, we dropped about, how many catches do you think we dropped that day?
I think 9.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what happened that day. And then we got a little bit unlucky against Ireland there, where it was a sunny day and the game got called off. And just because they ranked higher at the world qualifiers, they went ahead and we had to play the 14th or whatever
it was. The 11th place playoff. Can I talk about that for a second here? Yeah. Because I remember that, because we had the same scenario against the U.S., but it was raining and the field was wet. And they had us go out for an over. One of our players slipped on the field. The U.S. was saying that it was on purpose.
Yeah.
In knowing the guy that slipped, there was no way that it was on purpose. So, and then they called the game off. Then we go to Ireland. It's sunny all day. We had to take a bus for like 2 hours to this place. Yeah. We get there, and our coaches decide that we should stay in the change room because it makes it look like we want to play. Ireland is staying in the change room because they know if the game's called off, they're going up.
Yeah.
We should have been out on the field running around, doing things to show like, hey, this field is okay to play. But instead, our coaches locked us in our change room and didn't allow us to get out.
Yeah, like that day, like, I was so young that I still probably don't, I don't really recollect it pretty well. But I just remember game getting called off when it was blue skies and like steaming heat. And I was so confused. Obviously, ICC has their rules in place. But that was a shame, though, because that would have been a nice game to play. Because we shit the bed a little bit against Ireland in Toronto, where we should have won. Chase, it was it once. We should have won that. And then that was probably a game that we were up for. At least I was. I wanted to beat Ireland. Ireland's always a good game. Yeah. They got a few good players there and stuff. But that was the only thing that was pretty, wasn't great. Because it was like two games in the plate that we didn't even end up playing, right? They just like.
Yeah. We only played four games, right? With two of them were rained out. And it's kind of, you know, this has been a great interview with you, obviously taking you back memory lane for a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to talk about two guys that are obviously no longer with us, but just the influence that they've had on your career and kind of your life. I'm going to start off with the late, great Mr. Brian Hale. Just tell us about his influence on you and the journey and kind of what he's meant for you in terms of your career.
Yeah, no, he was, you guys know, he was awesome. Like, he was a man, like, just different. Like, I've never met a man like that. Like I would go on tour and still go by his house or give him a call, like, before every tour. And this was like after I left TCA, but like, he was one of those guys that, like, he made you feel like you were the best player in the world. Like, you could go play against like Australia and you thought, holy, I think I have a shot of making double 100 here. Like, that's like the way he was. But he was the way he was with everyone, I think he was a little bit more thing towards me, so I got a bit lucky there. But like, my technique, my fundamentals, like the type of people, like person I am now, stems from the way he taught us growing up. So that's like, I tell everyone, I'm like, you guys, like, you missed out, like, just the way he was with young kids and stuff like that, especially with me. Like, I don't think there was anyone that could have done a better job. But like, he was awesome. Like, and if he was around right now, like, he would be like awesome guy still to talk about cricket. And he was a guy that, like, regardless what's happening, how bad cricket is, how good it is, very even keel. You could be scoring hundreds, you could be scoring zeros, very even. I have a nice story, actually. So we were playing one time at playing Ireland at the club. That's the game Strillo almost beat Sachin's 200 right after he scored it. So I'm at the boundary and I let two runs go. I'm like 15 at this time. And Ash is captain, and Ash is strict captain. Like, get out. Like, and I let two runs go. Like I don't sight the ball and it's two runs. And he just, Ash goes, dude, if you want to play under me, like you'll make sure you're like alert, like in harder words. But, and I think coach is sitting in the patio. So the patio side, he heard it. So I come off and we get the bat and he goes, you know, he puts his hand on the chair like this. And he goes, son, former TCA, like TCA, fellow TCA guy, shouldn't be yelling at you like that. I said, coach, yeah, that was my fault. You know, like, don't let two runs go. You know, let two runs go like that. So, like, he's, like, on my side. And then right after, he's, like, against me. I'm like, you going to let man take two runs on you? I said, oh, jeez. So, like, he's like that. Like, he made sure, like, he was on both sides. Like, but he was always very honest, which was, like, always the best thing. But not enough words to describe that man. He was a great man, though, for sure.
He was the same with everybody, man. Whether you were a 5-year-old kid, as you were when you first started with TCA, or you were the likes of Ash or Zubin, he was the exact same with everybody, which was awesome. And then lastly, Nitz, you've got some new artwork on your little arm there. Yeah. Why don't you show the camera your new piece of artwork?
Got some new ink there. I don't know if you can see that.
Nitesh, I'm hearing you're having the tattoo. The very big tattoo.
Yeah, I am hearing you're having the very big tattoo.
Tell us about it. It's obviously it's a memorial piece. Tell us a little. We'll kind of let you speak to it.
So it's actually not done. It has to wrap around. But like 5 hours was too much for me. I was struggling there. But it's just a timepiece. Obviously, got my old man's initials in there. I got like death time, and I got three roses, which symbolize my mom and two sisters. But like on the other side, you got to get some stuff done. I'd probably get like the Lord's Pavilion because that's the last place I went with him before the accident, and try to incorporate some Canadian memories in there and stuff like that. But I just thought it'd be nice to get something permanent and stuff like that. So just went for it and it turned out pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest.
Looks very cool, buddy. Awesome. I know you've been thinking about doing it for a while, and those things you got to be patient with because you know it's there forever. And you know, you'll always have that sort of memory there forever. And those are the important things about the tattoos. For me, I'm actually more into the tribute to your mom and your sisters because I know how you've stepped up in that regard. And obviously they take extra special care of you, but I see in your old age now, you know, how close you are with them, how much time you spend with them and making that a priority. And when you were away for a long time, you know, I know how much you miss that. So I really have to sort of shout that out. And just for me, you know, really sort of proud at where you're at now and what you've become, buddy.
Cheers, beast.
I mean, you got sentimental on us there, Shades, and nearly brought a tear to my eye. But
don't worry, I'll pick you next week, man.
I mean, obviously, like you said, it is a memorial piece for your father. Just tell us about some of your earliest memories with your father, because I mean, I know that's the reason you play cricket, right? Tell us a little bit about some of your earlier memories and then the influence that he had on your cricketing career.
Yeah, so dad was the reason I started playing cricket, right? We used to come as a 3-year-old kid, go to the cricket club, watch the cricket, have some chicken fingers and Coke, you know? He's not allowed to have beer at that time, too young. But yeah, obviously our dad was playing there, and then I think Ash and Zoob were playing there, like, oh, Mr. Hale, and that's like the connection that happened there. But dad was always like on my side with cricket and stuff. Like, he was pretty, like, always hard. I think it's the right way to be as a kid, disciplined and do the right things. I remember he used to bowl like full pace in the nets. I used to get hit everywhere. And I used to cry, but like you can't show them the weakness, right? So, but I got a lot of thanks for my dad, like just the way he was. Pretty solid guy. Like he got along with a lot of people, and like I can know that with like people reaching out like for like his birthday and stuff like that. It's like pretty awesome. But he was more like a friend. I think the cricket club culture at that time probably rubbed off on him the way he started bringing me up, which is a massive thing because like it was probably would have been much different if he wasn't in that environment. But like he was an awesome guy. He was like coach, but like he would never interfere. Like he would let coach Mr. Hale do his thing. But obviously he's a dad, so he always wanted to have a little bit of a say. But he was an awesome guy. Like obviously we miss him, but like he was awesome. Like everything he did, like he was always very supportive, like a proper dad, but like a proper lad as well, you know, like made sure everything's in tip-top condition and you're doing well and happy, but like also you got to make sure that you're disciplined. And especially at that age where I was so young, I think discipline is probably the most important, like to get your priorities right. So he was awesome. So awesome. Him and coach, like that combination that I had in my life was pretty special, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, your dad was a phenomenal human being. at the end of the day. I just want to share a memory that I have. He literally taught me how to bowl, right? Like, I think he was one of the main reasons. He would be bowling to you, and then I would see things that he was doing. I was like, hey, how do you do that? How do you do that? But one of the things that I do remember about your dad was he told me a story about his middle finger. Do you know the story, Nitz?
I have an idea, but I don't know the story. But I know that middle finger was a little bent.
Okay, so let me tell you the story about his middle finger. So his father, your grandfather, wasn't a big fan of him playing cricket. So he would sneak out of the house and play games. And what ended up happening was that training, he took a ball to the finger, and his middle finger was obviously broken. It was literally like it was on a 45-degree angle if you ever saw his finger. And it's on his bowling hand.
Yeah.
So he just kept it a secret. He would like wear, like, try and hide it, not show his finger. Obviously never got looked at, so it stayed crooked for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
But what he said was, this is now how I swing the ball. So his middle finger actually was a benefit to him bowling, because he used to bowl these hooping in-swingers. Right? He could take it the other way as well, but his stock ball was a hooping in-swinger. And yeah, his middle finger then was the reason that he could bowl those. And that kind of shows the kind of man that he was. And obviously you are as well, because you take everything in stride. Everything happens for a reason. You take it in stride and you're better off for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that middle finger. Yeah, I do recall that.
So yeah. So for me, memory of Vickle, buddy, he was one of the worst fielders you'll ever see. But what a man, like, what a legend. He used to sort guys out. It was unbelievable. We used to even plan like for runouts, because he would bowl these big in swingers and then the guys would try to, anything on the offside that they would get, they would try to get off strike, set up a couple runouts like that. And he would always talk about it. He kind of already knew what the batsman was all about, just by how they're holding their bat, but he never shared those secrets unless you went and like spoke to him. Like, you know, when you're in cover, you walk up to the bowler or mid off, whatever. So he'd only talk about his bowling and all those secrets like then, the moment. But apart from that, you know, it was never really cricket talk with him. It was just more just banter and just a respect factor with him, and like a father figure. And that's my memory of him, buddy. So you're lucky you got probably mom's side of the athleticism gene with that one.
Good thing I didn't get that type of fielding then. Holy.
Oh man. Like, I know my economy rate would be probably 1 point less.
why did you put him in positions where you're getting hit then?
Well, like, dude, back in those, it's so weird when you think about fielding positions now, right? So back in those days, where would we try to hide him? At short fine leg, right? As an off spinner, short fine leg, that's where all the balls go. Like, if you kind of think about it, it's a hot spot now. So where in nowadays cricket, where would you hide these kind of guys, man? It would be,
you should just put him in slip. It never goes there for you.
Oh, you know what? If I remember correctly, one time there was like he was in short third man, and you know, Pace was bowling, some guy like went to smash it, and when he just like lifted up his hand and the ball just stuck to his one hand, and he was just like holding the ball up there, like it was, you know, like any moment he would field one or catch one, it was crazy. And you know, it wasn't fair to him, because we had all the other guys in the team were like super gun fielders.
Yeah,
really let us down, to be honest. It was one of those things where it's like, don't worry, we'll make up for it with like a brilliant run out from one of the guys or a brilliant catch from one of the guys. So it fit in. And then obviously his bowling was unbelievable. It always used to bowl in the power play. Back then it was 10 overs of power play, two guys out, and we had a
15.
Yeah, 15. Jeez, yeah.
That's old, eh? That's like an old rule. But I could say for sure, like, he just enjoyed like the vibes. Like, he always stick around after practice, regardless if I have school in the morning, I'm there till 12, going out of the way to pick up guys. Like, we just tell like the culture back, like at the club, it was good, really good vibes. The guys just enjoyed like company. Like, that was what it was. It was pretty fun.
I gotta say, it's kind of coming back, man. Like, you know, there's a lot to be said for the new generation, which is basically you kind of in a leadership role at the club. And if you look full circle and how things have developed, it's kind of your time now. And I think I said that to you, obviously we're close buddies, and it's your time now, and you've done a fantastic job just establishing that culture. But it is, to be honest, your responsibility, as it is your time, to then kind of Loughborough style it and leave a culture there for when your time is done. But that's what we're kind of establishing there. It's fun to be around, and I'm excited to be back.
Thanks for coming, pal.
And with that, that brings us to the end to part one of this episode. Nitz, thanks for joining us. We'll see you for part two.
No dramas, lads.
This podcast is sponsored by The Bat Clinic. You can find The Bat Clinic on Instagram at @the_bat_clinic. And remember, you get 10% off with the promo code dropped again. Some of those bats might get a little nick, a little crack. Reach out to The Bat Clinic, and once again, you can get 10% off using the promo code dropped again. And with that, that wraps up another episode of Dropped Again. We thank you once again for listening. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And we look forward to speaking to you next time.
Zabardas, yeah!
Adios.
Peace.